Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my great pleasure to introduce you to the festival's 2014 season, Around Dvorak. Music at Menlo's 2014 season explores dual facets of the unfolding of Western music throughout the classical and romantic eras and into the 20th century. Catalyzed by a lineage of composers from Haydn and Mozart, through Schubert and Brahms, to Schoenberg, Webern, and Berg a generation later, Vienna emerged as the epicenter of a dynamic musical tradition that remains central to the canon today. Meanwhile, starting in the latter half of the 19th century, the folk traditions of Hungary, Romania, and the Czech lands permeated Western classical music, as composers like Bedřich Smetana, Lajos Janáček, Béla Bartók, and Zoltán Kodály awakened to the richness of their own musical heritage and sought to cultivate a distinct musical voice. At the center of this dialectic was Antonín Dvořák, the self-described simple Czech musicant who likewise possessed the romantic ferocity of his mentor, Johannes Brahms. No other composer so fluently integrated the dual traditions of Western classicism and Central European folk music, developing a distinct musical language whose influence would be felt as far as the United States. This season, Music at Menlo offers 8 colorful concert programs that revolve around Dvorak, taking listeners on a thrilling journey between Vienna, Prague, and other fascinating musical destinations along the way. Audio notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Audio Notes author and producer Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the festival. This summer's first concert program, Dvorak in Context, traverses a wide geographical and historical expanse, from Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart to Béla Bartók. In Mozart, we have the paragon of the Viennese classical tradition within which Dvorak developed his own musical voice. In Bartók, we encounter an early 20th century master who, like Dvorak a generation before him, integrated the folk character of his homeland into a highly sophisticated compositional language. These pieces bookend Dvorak's Opus 51 string quartet, a work whose flowing lyricism, rhythmic flair, and singular accent capture the essence of the Czech Romantic's musical identity. The program further celebrates Dvorak's legacy in the 3 madrigals for violin and viola by his artistic heir, Bohuslav Martinů. Concert Program 1 begins with Mozart's Serenade in D Major, K239, commonly known as the Serenata Notturna.
The Serenata Notturna, composed in 1776, belongs to a seemingly inconsequential literature. Serenades are a kind of musical greeting card, typically intended for outdoor celebrations, weddings, graduations, that sort of thing. In the late 18th century, these pieces were composed quickly as the occasion for them arose, and rarely with the expectation of a second performance. And since they were composed for immediate, one-time use, much of the 18th century serenade repertoire, not surprisingly, doesn't survive. Of the more than 30 serenades that Mozart's father, Leopold Mozart, composed, we only have one, which was only discovered in the 20th century. Likewise, the composer Michael Haydn, Joseph Haydn's brother, churned out scores of serenades, often in just a matter of days, and only 4 of them remain. So these pieces aspired neither to profundity nor to posterity. But, of course, in the hands of such a creative genius as Mozart, even a genre approached so casually could be a vessel for exquisite music. And so it's fortunate that, in Mozart's case, quite a number of his serenades survive, including his famous Eine kleine Nachtmusik, the Hafner and Posthorn serenades, and this charming Serenata Notturna. On their surface, Mozart's serenades all share an immediately affable demeanor. But on a more intent listen, each possesses its own particular brilliance. In the case of the Serenata Notturna, Notturna, by the way, indicates that the piece is composed for a nighttime occasion. The music's unique charm begins with its curious instrumentation of quartet of solo strings accompanied by string orchestra and timpani. The sonic contrast between the quartet and the mass of full strings creates a sense of space, amplified by the booming sound of the timpani. There's also a lively dynamism between the solo strings and the full ensemble, not unlike the dramatic energy we find in Baroque Concerti Grossi of Bach and Vivaldi. The Serenata Notturna is in three movements. Following the opening march movement, the second movement is a graceful minuet, a French dance form popular throughout the 17th and 18th centuries. And the work concludes with a cheerful rondo, marked by a chuckling theme in the first violin. All of the most cherished musical values of the classical period are given their most perfect voice in the music of Mozart, whether in his most majestic symphonic and operatic creations, or in seeming bagatelles like the Serenata Notturna. Viennese classicism valued the primacy of melody. Mozart's melodies are poetic, expressive, uncannily beautiful. His rich harmonies and instrumental textures, both on full display throughout the serenade, are equally seductive. And as classicism moved away from the complexity of Bach's fugues towards more transparent forms, the effortlessness of Mozart's music belies its formal sophistication. That characteristic balance of expressive beauty and formal elegance in Mozart's music, to be found without fail throughout his entire oeuvre, and which is perhaps even more striking in such ephemera as the Serenata Notturna, when it seems like he's hardly even trying, that quality is the quintessence of Mozart's craft. And for Antonin Dvorak, as for myriad other composers, it represented an ideal model, both technically and aesthetically. Dvorak once described the struggles of his early years as a composer, saying it was, quote, "not that I was unable to produce music, but I had not technique enough to express all that was in me. I had ideas, but I could not utter them perfectly," end quote. In order to develop the technique he felt himself lacking, Dvorak studied the music of Mozart. By 1878, Dvorak was enjoying the start of a flourishing career. He had scored recent successes with his three Slavonic Rhapsodies and the first set of Slavonic dances for orchestra, as well as the Opus 48 string sextet, and his star was quickly rising. These works, and others, caught audiences' attention for their integration of the Czech folk style into a classical approach that would become Dvorak's signature. Following this string of successes, the Florentine String Quartet, one of the day's preeminent chamber ensembles, approached Dvorak about writing a quartet in the irresistible Slavic folk style that characterizes other recent works. Dvorak obliged with one of the finest of his 14 string quartets, the quartet number 10 in E-flat, opus 51. The music that begins the quartet testifies to Dvorak's gifts as a melodist. After a warm introduction, ascending from the cello up to the first violin, the quietly radiant theme appears. The tranquility of this music quickly intensifies into a lively dance. And from this dance-like energy, a thoughtful second theme emerges, reverting to the even temper of the opening measures. But this music, too, Dvorak manages to transform with exquisite subtlety from a pensive utterance into a light, carefree polka. The movement's central development section focuses on the exposition's first theme. Which Dvorak rides through a wide range of keys and expressive characters, starting in the moody key of E minor. Soon we're in the luminescent key of A major. The theme assumes a prayerful aura as Dvorak slows the tempo to a hymn-like stillness. A joyful G major outburst follows. The music returns triumphantly to the home key of E flat major. But as a kind of dramatic coup, instead of reprising the first theme, which is what typically happens at this point in a sonata form movement, Dvorak proceeds right to the second theme. This playful transgression from the classical sonata form model of Haydn and Mozart might have startled listeners at the time. It's a subtle compositional choice, but one that signals an unbridled exuberance. Dvorak saves the restatement of the first theme in the home key for the movement's contented coda. The second movement is a dumka, a traditional folk lament that would serve Dvorak frequently throughout his compositional career. Above strummed chords in the cello, the first violin and viola intone the dumka's plaintive melody in dialogue. A key characteristic of the dumka is its extreme expressive contrast between heavy-hearted melancholy and high-spirited vim. The contrasting middle section of the quartet's slow movement resembles another traditional Czech form, the furiant, a swaggering folk dance. Following the Dumka, Dvorak departs the realm of folk music for the third movement, an unabashedly sentimental romance. The final movement returns to the bohemian folk style of the first two movements. The first violin starts things off with a rustic, happy-go-lucky tune. The rest of the quartet joins in, running this easygoing tune through expertly crafted polyphony. Again, we hear Dvorak's characteristic blend of simplicity and sophistication. A second melody appears, a flowing, slightly subdued foil to the main dance melody. Dvorak's powers of invention are on full display throughout the finale, as he develops these two themes in a variety of ways, from hard-hitting counterpoint to a tranquil statement of the second theme in spacious octaves between first violin and cello, set to a soft drone in the inner strings. The original melody appears, its guileless simplicity transformed into euphoric glee. And what started off as a rustic folk dance races to a blazing finish. Of the generation of composers after Dvorak, Bohuslav Martinů is widely regarded, second perhaps only to Leoš Janáček, as the most significant Czech composer of the 20th century. Martinů also ranks among his generation's most remarkably prolific composers, writing in virtually all genres of vocal and instrumental music. In addition to being one of the 20th century's most prolific composers, Martinů also possessed one of the most distinct and personal styles of his generation. He was influenced early on by his teachers, the Czech composer Josef Suk, and then the French composer Albert Roussel, with whom he studied in Paris. Since hearing the Prague premiere of Pelléas et Mélisande in 1908, he was deeply influenced by Debussy as well. And while in Paris, he also encountered the music of Stravinsky and the composers of Les Six and discovered jazz. Alongside this broad palette of musical tastes, Martinů's output from the 1930s onward also reveals a growing interest in Czech folk music and culture. In this regard, he greatly admired Dvorak and Janáček. And finally, Martinů also took a deep interest in music from the Renaissance and Baroque, and drew frequently from forms and conventions of early music in his own work. All of these ingredients coalesce into the piquant recipe of Martinu's compositional language. The designation of his duo number one for violin and viola as three madrigals offers a case in point. The madrigal is a 14th century musical form. In the 16th and 17th centuries, the term came to specifically describe secular, polyphonic vocal works, and then, in later periods, was loosely appropriated for instrumental works as well. Martinu applied the term to more than 20 pieces over his career, but despite the evocation of an earlier era, the three madrigals have an unmistakably modern perspective. One immediately striking characteristic of the three madrigals is the strength of Martinu's writing for both the violin and viola parts. The two instruments are given equal roles, at times lyrical, at other times rhythmically charged. Also, the sonic breadth that Martinu achieves with just these two instruments rivals the sound of many string quartets. We hear these qualities right from the outset of the first movement, throughout which the duo shuttles back and forth between big, unified sounds and playfully trading phrases with each other. Following the rhythmic vigor of these opening measures, Martinu introduces a long-breath melody, first in the violin above 16th note figurations in the viola, then vice versa. The rest of the movement relies on the melodic and rhythmic ideas introduced in these first few bars. But Martinu conjures a thrilling dramatic arc by developing those ideas and by varying textures. In one passage, Martinu replicates the formula of the opening. Rhythmic double stops, followed by rapid back-and-forth dialogue, then a long melody. But notice in what a different light those gestures are now cast. The big chords are rhythmically off-kilter. The back-and-forth feels more frenzied. And the violin melody, now set above dark double stops in the viola, is moody and angular. Martinu introduces a whole new palette of textures in the slow second movement. Both instruments play with mutes, dulling the brilliance of the string sound. Evocative harmonies and murmuring trills create an aura of mystery. The concluding allegro returns to the playful repartee of the first movement. The program concludes with a divertimento for strings by the Hungarian pianist and composer Béla Bartók. Béla Bartók ranks alongside the likes of Claude Debussy, Igor Stravinsky, and Arnold Schoenberg as one of the most original and influential composers of the 20th century. His viscerally compelling musical language drew from a wide range of influences, from Bach and Beethoven to his own contemporaries and even American jazz. Alongside these, another major aspect of Bartók's art that's perhaps of most lasting significance is his interest in and avid championship of Central European folk music. Bartok is generally regarded as history's first ethnomusicologist. He traveled extensively throughout the Central European countryside, listening to and recording Hungarian, Romanian, and Slovak peasant music. And his deep study of this music was the most important influence in his own work. His absorption of peasant music and his integration of it into many of his scores uniquely distinguish his musical language and have established Bartok as the central figure of modern Hungarian music. Bartok composed the Divertimento for strings in 1939 on a commission from the Swiss conductor Paul Sacher for his Basel Chamber Orchestra. It was a difficult period as Hungary slid into the grasp of the Nazis and Europe headed towards war. The psychological strain of the worsening social and political climate prevented Bartok from working, and Sacher, who 2 years before had commissioned Bartok's Music for Strings, Percussion, and Celesta, invited Bartok and his wife to spend the summer in his chalet in Switzerland. This invitation to retreat to neutral territory, followed by the commission for a new piece for his orchestra, were a balm to Bartok's spirits. In a letter to his son, he wrote, quote, "Fortunately, I can put this worry out of my mind if I have to. It does not disturb my work. Somehow I feel like a musician of olden times, the invited guest of a patron of the arts. For here I am entirely the guest of the Sachers. They see to everything, from a distance. In a word, I am living alone, in an ethnographic object, a genuine peasant cottage. The furnishings are not in character, but so much the better, because they are the last word in comfort. They even had a piano brought from Bern for me. The janitor's wife cooks and cleans, and my wish is her command. Recently, even the weather has been favoring me. However, I can't take advantage of the weather to make excursions. I have to work. A piece for Sacher himself, something for strings. In this respect, also my position is like that of the old-time musician. Luckily, the work went well, and I finished it in 15 days, a piece of about 25 minutes. I just completed it yesterday." End quote. After completing the Divertimento for strings and beginning work on his sixth string quartet, Bartok received word that his mother had passed away. He returned home for the winter, then, the following spring, embarked on an American concert tour with the violinist Joseph Sigeti. In October of 1940, Bartok and his wife traveled to America once again, settling in New York City until the composer's death in 1945. As a reflection, perhaps, of the temporary respite Bartok found from wartime anxieties while a guest at Sacher's chalet, the Divertimento is a bright and pleasing work. In the wake of such heavily chromatic pieces as Music for Strings, Percussion, and Celesta, the Second Violin Concerto, and the Sonata for Two Pianos and Percussion, the Divertimento's immediate accessibility surprised audiences. But actually, what the uncompromising dissonance of those other works demonstrated was Bartok's highly evolved mastery of counterpoint, modeled after the music of Bach, and the Divertimento, which Bartok described as a cross between a concerto grosso and a concertino, is just another manifestation of Bartok's interest in Baroque music. The work begins with a long, folk-like melody in the first violin, above a bouncing accompaniment in the lower strings. Like the Baroque Concerti Grossi of Bach and Vivaldi, Bartok's Divertimento features a dialogue between soloists and the full ensemble, as, for instance, in the first movement's second theme, which is carried by the soloists, but with tutti, or full ensemble, interjections. Bartok probes the dynamic between soloists and tutti further throughout the movement, as in this passage, just a moment later. The violin soloists whisper short melodic fragments, with the second violin simply inverting the utterances of the first. These understated gestures are met with explosive tutti chords. Thank you. Bartok once noted, quote, "The extremes of variation, which is so characteristic of folk music, is at the same time the expression of my own nature," end quote. And we encounter his penchant for extreme variation throughout this work. Listen to how he transforms, with great subtlety, the folk-like first theme in the movement's development section. And how later in the movement, he more drastically transfigures his central thematic materials. The slow second movement is dark and ominous, giving voice perhaps to Bartok's distress during this fraught period. The movement is an ABA form, with the hushed nervousness of the A section building steadily to a ferocious climax. The finale brings us back to the first movement's rollicking joie de vivre. The movement is a rondo, the classical form in which a central refrain recurs in alternation with contrasting episodes. Bartok's refrain is an effervescent dance-like tune. The episodes are equally lively and even earthier in character. In the midst of this whirling dance, displaying his sure-handed technique, Bartok ventures into a Bachian fugato passage. This quickly dissolves into what sounds like a sung gypsy lament, above keening tremolando in the second violins and violas. ¶¶ But after traversing these various episodes, the Divertimento's sunny demeanor ultimately wins the day. Audio Notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Mozart's Serenata Notturna was performed by A Far Cry and produced by Jesse Lewis and Roger Tapping. Dvorak's String Quartet in E-flat Major Opus 51 and Martinu's Three Madrigals are performed by the Emerson String Quartet and appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Dvorak's String Sextet in A Major, Opus 48, performed by violinists Joseph Silverstein and Annika Vafian, violists Mark Holloway and Paul Neubauer, and cellists Andreas Brantelied and Fred Sherry, and Bartok's Divertimento for Strings, performed by Ida Kavafian, Sean Lee, Kristen Lee, Choliang Lim, Yura Lee, Arno Sussman, Areta Jula, Nicola Dautricor, Aaron Boyd, Stephen Tenenbaum, Richard O'Neill, Pierre Lapointe, Nicholas Kanalakis, Mihai Marika, Dane Johansson, and Kurt Moroki appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Haydn's String Quartet in D Minor, Opus 76, No. 2, performed by the Danish String Quartet, and Schubert's Rondo in A Major for violin and strings, performed by violinist Sean Lee with Georgia Flizanis, Benjamin Bielman, Richard O'Neill, and David Finkel, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Haydn's Piano Trio No. 27 in C Major is performed by the Mendelssohn Piano Trio and appears courtesy of Centaur Records. Schubert's Impromptu in A-flat Major, performed by Nikolai Demidenko, and Rondo Brillant, performed by violinist Alina Ibrahimova and pianist Cedric Tabergian, and Dvorak's String Quintet in G Major, Opus 77, performed by the Kuhl Quartet and Peter Bukowski, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.